She rolled her eyes. Fine. So, what's your first class?
My first class, fortunately, was not with Sarah. As much as I liked her, I knew she wasn't going to stop bothering me about my secret until I gave her hints, and I put together enough to know that it could put her and me in actual danger. It only occurred to me while I walked that Sarah might have been in danger regardless of whether or not I told her what I knew. If anyone knew we were related, they could easily assume she knew whatever I did, or simply try to take her for leverage. I put "find a way to convince Sarah to protect herself" as a high-importance item on my mental checklist. I'd need to do it discreetly, in a way that didn't draw too much extra attention toward her. We both had general magic theory as our first class of the day, but we were assigned to different lecture halls. There were about 24 of them across the campus. The teacher was an unfamiliar one. She was a young, black-skinned woman with the distinctive poise of a combat mage. She walked with the assistance of a cane, which helped to conceal a limp. A dueling wound, or a war wound, maybe? It took me a moment to realize that the cane she used was a dueling cane. A normal dueling cane might barely reach from elbow to wrist in length. The longer style that could double as a walking cane had fallen out of fashion a century earlier. I'd never trained with one, but I'd seen my great-grandfather's on display at home. She took her place at the podium, grinning and revealing a perfect set of teeth.
"Good morning, class. I'm Professor Meltlich."
That line drew a murmur from the class. Her surname was a local legend. She'd earned it by literally setting a lake on fire during a magical duel. I still had no idea how she'd done it. I was very eager to find out.
"This class will go over the basic principles of magic that are applicable to all users of attunements. As this is the first class, I'll be taking some time to cover the structure of the course, some basic terminology, and the reading material you'll need to get started on. But first, we'll take attendance."
She read student names from a list, and I answered at the appropriate time. I recognized a few names of people from my dorm, but none of the ones who had strongly interested me. Patrick Wayland was there, though, and I looked at him when he responded to his name. He caught my look, gave a startled expression, and then gave me a subdued wave. I waved back. I regretted it almost immediately and began to worry that he would want to socialize with me later. This was followed by a few moments of self-recrimination. After all, why wouldn't I want to reunite with a childhood friend? And a longer stretch of crushing self-doubt.
The professor tapped her cane against the desk, which snapped me back into attention. "Now that we've handled attendance, let's discuss this class, shall we? Magic theory will be your primary class this year, and in spite of the generic name, it contains the most important things you'll be studying. Consequently, magic theory will also be the class where you are tested on the sum total of what you've learned in other classes."
She gestured with her cane toward the right wall.
"On the other side of the campus, you'll find the testing grounds. You will be tested 3 times during the semester on those grounds, typically with a group. These tests will determine if you've managed to pick up enough to apply the teachings of all of your classes. Think of each of these tests as being similar to your judgment, but with a team and more difficult challenges."
I nodded along with the rest of the class. I'd heard of simulated judgments before. My brother had taken one. Apparently it had been insufficient.
"These tests are important for allowing your teachers to evaluate if you're ready for more dangerous tests, such as re-entering the tower through the climber's gate. If you make it far enough, you'll go in through that gate at the end of the semester."
I heard a series of murmurs from the class on that. I'd already heard about the tower excursion, but apparently it wasn't common knowledge. Professor Meltlich tapped on the podium again, signaling for silence.
"Of course, that requires a degree of success with the previous tests. Historically, only about 60% of our students make it to the final test. Those who fail early in the year will be dismissed and sent directly to military service, without the benefits of being fully trained attuned. If you fail toward the end of the year, you'll be forced to repeat this year's classes and try again. That will not count as your second year at the academy, and thus you would still have to complete an additional year of classes before beginning your mandatory service.
I can't let either of those happen. If I get sent off to the military without learning to use my attunement, I could die without ever getting another chance at the tower. Even being sent back to restart the year could lower my total score to a point where the military would never allow me to be a climber.
I'm certain most of you will want to avoid those unseemly fates, and thus it behooves you to study to the best of your ability. For this class, your primary text will be Elementary Concepts of Magic by Stephen Breyer. There are three optional texts, and you'll find those listed in your papers. I encourage you to read the optional texts, but only if you are keeping pace with your reading for your other classes. She smiled, raising her cane.
Now that we've gotten through the boring part... Meltlake's cane sprouted a stream of fire into the sky. I heard murmurs of awe from a good number of the students. They apparently hadn't seen as many demonstrations of magic as I had. That barely rated as a parlor trick.
"Let's talk about mana calling, shall we?"
She grinned, lowering her cane.
"Mana calling is the foundation of all magic. All humans have mana in our bodies, and that mana can take several distinct forms. For non-attuned humans and most weak monsters, the majority of this mana is generic. In academics, we refer to this as gray mana. Non-attuned can generally only utilize their mana through devices, such as a dueling cane. As an attuned, however, you will be learning to utilize your mana for a broad variety of different purposes. An individual application of mana for a specific purpose is generally called a spell, and the use of spells is referred to as magic.
I could already see a few people frowning, and I could guess at one of the reasons why. Some attunements weren't overtly magical in nature. The Guardian attunement, for example, was focused on unarmed physical combat. I knew they could do things that were beyond normal human capabilities, like breaking a wall with a punch, but I hadn't thought of that as being magic.
The most important thing to learn is that magic, as a general concept, is easy. Learning specific spells and getting them right, however, can be quite difficult. To properly cast a spell, you must remember the exact amounts of mana you need, and then draw that mana from the appropriate parts of your body.
Meltlake twirled her cane like a baton, creating a trail of flame that emitted from the tip and followed her motions. I heard a murmur of awe as she drew a burning attunement symbol, which lingered in the air until she waved her other hand and dispersed the flames.
I am an elementalist. My attunement gives me access to fire and air mana at the location of the mark, in my case, my right hand. So what would I do if I ran out of mana in my right hand?
One of the students stood up to indicate he had a question. Belatedly, I realized it was Patrick.
We need to convert the mana from somewhere else in our body?
The professor nodded.
Very good. Patrick, was it? You may sit down. She tapped her forehead with two fingers. Let's take the mind, for example. As one might expect, the mind primarily generates mental mana. As an elementalist, I can't actually use this to cast mental spells, but I can convert it into air mana or fire mana through the use of my attunement. This is less efficient than using the appropriate type of mana, and I would not recommend attempting it until you have more experience. That said, it is an essential technique for attuned to learn.
She gave more examples, explaining that an inappropriate mixture of mana could cause spells to change in function or fail catastrophically. Maybe I can deliberately create new spells by mixing different types of mana. I probably shouldn't experiment with that until I understand this much better, though.
It's also important not to draw too much mana from any specific part of your body. Using too much of your heart's mana will kill you. Using too much of your mind's mana will also kill you. Other mana pools are less likely to cause immediate death, but nevertheless, overuse is a significant danger and often can cause permanent damage.
Oh, good. All I have to worry about is brain damage or killing myself when I use my attunement. Of the two costs, it was the former that made me shudder. I was willing to sacrifice a great deal in the pursuit of the power I needed, but my mind... Well... Everyone had something they were afraid of losing.
Your first assignment will be to head to the Divinatory before our next class on Tuesday. There, you will be tested to learn your current mana values in your main mana pool locations,
mind, heart, right hand, left hand, right leg, and lungs. You will also be tested to learn safe mana capacities for each location. If you are discovered exceeding your safe limits without explicit permission, you will face severe punishments, potentially including expulsion. She gave another toothy grin after that line. Class is dismissed. I escaped the lecture hall as swiftly as I could. I wasn't quite ready for a reunion with Patrick or any other old friends that might have seen me. It turns out that spending 3 years away from school made me less eager to socialize. Who would have guessed? I figured I'd probably catch up with Patrick eventually and make some excuses. I couldn't run away from old acquaintances forever. Not if I wanted to succeed, anyway. Getting to graduation was one of my highest priorities. I needed to graduate and get a high enough score to ensure I could spend my years of military service as a climber rather than in some other branch of the service. To ensure that, I'd need to make sure I took my classes extremely seriously. I needed allies if I was going to succeed in group tests, and I'd need people I could trust for when I eventually started climbing the tower. No sane person tried to climb one of the towers alone. Once I'd gotten clear of sight from the lecture hall, my next objective was to figure out which elective I was going to pick. 5 of my classes for the year were mandatory, but I had a single elective slot to choose. I should have picked it much sooner, possibly with some advice from the teacher responsible for overseeing Phoenix Division, but it hadn't felt like a pressing concern. With some of the electives starting that day, though, I had to make a choice. The most obvious options were the ones that were directly applicable to my attunement. I saw 3 of those. Introduction to Ritual Magic, the Art of Artifice, Permanent Enchantments, and Introductory Potion Enchantments. There were also some options that appealed to me on a personal level. Introduction to Magical Dueling would have been the obvious choice in that regard. I'd spent most of my life training with a dueling cane and studying the techniques used by my father, his father, and so on down the line. Of course, they'd all been attuned, and most of those techniques weren't things I could hope to mimic properly. Even now, I'd be a subpar magical duelist. My attunement wasn't made for direct confrontations. People would probably laugh at an enchanter for even trying to take the class. If they did, I'd be the one laughing after our first match. Enchanter or not, I was still a Cadence. I knew how to fight. I looked at some other options, and a few of the classes focused on history and tactics sounded interesting, but I knew where I was leaning the moment I saw the dueling class on the list. I also knew I'd potentially be less competitive with my own attunement if I didn't take an elective to enhance my skills. I decided to find a way to solve both problems at once. I went back to my room, skimmed the rules, and didn't see anything indicating I couldn't take an additional elective. That solidified my plan. I'd take the Art of Artifice and make magical items focused on dueling while attending the dueling class at the same time. I'd have to hope I could afford the materials for the items, and that I didn't have to fight anyone until I had some magic items ready. Gambling on multiple factors made me nervous, but that just meant that I'd have to work harder to minimize the risks. I knew I'd be hurting for free time if I took an extra class, but that was a problem for future me. I had a few options on when I could take the classes, but my schedule for the rest of the day was open, so I decided to go to the next dueling class that was available. That ended up being just a few hours later. I used that time to look up the relevant books for the class. It turned out there weren't any, and to pick up some lunch. There weren't any classrooms at the spot on the map where the class was listed. Instead, I found an outdoor stage with stands to seat at least a couple hundred people. It was clearly designed for theater performances, but when I took a seat in the stands, I figured I already had a pretty good idea of what we'd end up seeing on the stage. I was a bit early, so I watched other students trickling in, trying to size up my competition. At least half the students had a glove on their right hand. It was traditional for nobles to wear a glove until they had trusted retainers to protect them. The passing of the glove was a symbolic release of the wearer's well-being into the hands of another, and often one of the most significant ceremonies in a noble's life. Usually, the glove would be passed to a single retainer who had served the owner for many years. It was a daring formalization of their connection, and some nobles, my father included, never offered their glove to anyone. I'd always pictured giving my glove to Sarah when we were old enough to be attuned. Now, she'd never be a simple retainer to me. She was family. I'll probably never find someone else to be my retainer. It was a disappointing realization. I'd grown up on stories of the legendary bonds of loyalty between nobles and their retainers, and they'd settled in somewhere deep in my psyche. While many childhood ideals had eroded with the passage of time, the idea of having a retainer was rooted deeply enough in reality that it had dug in deep. This way, at least, I'll have to earn a retainer rather than being handed one. Maybe that's for the best. It felt a little better to think in those terms, and it helped to brush the line of thought from my mind. I turned back to observing the class. Most of the prospective duelists had the same few attunements, elementalists, guardians, and shapers. I noted a couple summoners as well. Summoners are going to be serious trouble until I can make some items, and probably even after that. An elementalist might be able to handle two against one, but I don't have any kind of battlefield-controlled capabilities. Sarah must have come to the same conclusion. She arrived shortly after the other summoners, two familiar figures trailing behind her. The first was Patrick, the same childhood friend I'd seen in my magic theory class. The second was Roland Royce, a son of two of my mother's retainers. Patrick had grown broad in the last few years. Not fat, just thick, like a bear. With a build like his, I would have expected a guardian attunement or something physically focused, but he proudly wore an elementalist mark on his exposed right hand. Roland was as short as I remembered, and wearing his usual cold and determined expression. At a glance, I didn't see his attunement mark, but I did see two dueling canes on his belt, one sitting on each side of his hips. With each use of a cane painfully drawing mana from the wielder's hands, it would require prodigious focus to use two of them accurately. I expected most people to laugh at Roland when they saw his setup. Instead, I mentally added him to the top of my threats list. Anyone who underestimated him was going to be sorely disappointed. If I had been born a few months earlier, Roland would have been one of my own retainers. It was traditional for the children of house retainers to become the retainers for the children of the succeeding line of the house. Since Roland was born before I was, though, he was assigned to Tristan's service. When Tristan disappeared, some families would have chosen to move Roland into the service of the next child in line, but my parents had never officially written Tristan off as dead. Much like Sarah, Roland's parents served my mother, not my father. When my mother left, he too went along with them. He was currently following Sarah, just a couple feet behind and to the right. That was how a retainer walked. Either one of my parents had formally transferred Roland into Sarah's service, which would be a huge insult to me as I was older than her, or he was making a statement of his own. Regardless, it certainly brought home my distinct lack of retainers. They didn't sit near me, which was good. I wasn't sure how I wanted to handle them just yet. The starting time for the class came and went with no sign of the teacher. I heard murmuring amongst the students, some speculation that Lord Teft might not arrive at all. It was a full 15 minutes into the class when one of the students, a tall girl I didn't recognize, let out a gasp and pointed at the stage.
"He's here! Just watching what we do!"
I narrowed my eyes, looking at the spot she was indicating. It was almost imperceptible, a rippling distortion in the air like a wave of heat. It was only with fierce concentration that I was able to discern the human shape. The sound of slow applause from the stage accompanied Lord Teft's appearance.
"Very good, Miss Callahan. A full 10 minutes faster than anyone in the previous class noticed me."
Lord Teft was handsome, the perfect image of a conventional gentleman, though unconventionally dressed. His suit was bright purple, the same color he'd worn on the stage. He leaned against a long wooden cane. Not a dueling cane. This one seemed ordinary. His blonde hair was meticulously cropped, and his smile displayed immaculate teeth. The students fell silent as he spoke.
Perception. This is the single most important characteristic for any prospective duelist. No amount of power, speed, or even finesse is sufficient to overwhelm an opponent who is sufficiently aware of your strengths and weaknesses.
He turned toward the student who had identified him.
Miss Callahan, you were the first to notice me. How and why? You may stand to answer.
She stood up, proving even taller than I had expected. She was at least my own height, if not taller. I might have imagined it, but I thought she was blushing a little bit.
Well, sir, I didn't think you'd be leaving us alone on the first day, so I just kept on looking for you.
Good. You may sit.
He waved a hand dismissively.
Something seemed amiss, so she kept looking. Now, can anyone tell me what she did wrong?
I frowned. Was he going to embarrass her further in front of our class? Roland stood up.
You.
The teacher pointed at Roland.
Go ahead.
Roland gestured toward the girl.
She found something that resembled what she was looking for. A blur, an indication of invisibility, and stopped there.
He folded his arms, turning back toward the stage.
But shadows can manage things more complex than a single blur, and standing around invisible in the middle of a stage? That's asking for attention. It's misdirection. You're somewhere else.
Lord Taft grinned.
An interesting assessment. You are also wrong. I'm standing right here. I simply wanted to see if someone would fabricate a mistake when none was made, and you performed admirably. You may sit down.
Roland's expression as he sat was even more dour than usual. I could understand why. Moreover, I was beginning to sense a theme in his teacher's style. Now that I knew what to look for, I found the blur sitting in the back of the stands almost immediately. I concentrated on the details as much as possible, and it looked to be roughly the same height and weight as Taft. The clothes seemed to match as well. Interesting. Roland might have been wrong about the teacher being on the stage, but the core of his argument was right. The man standing on the stage was a form of misdirection. Some duelists prided themselves on planning several moves ahead, much in the manner that strategists attempted to in war games. What move was Taft planning? I saw Roland's gaze shift just slightly to the same spot I'd seen. He'd seen the blur, too. He knew. And he saw me looking at him. I nodded, lifting my left hand and quickly extending two fingers in the air. An old signal we'd used in war games. An alliance offered. Roland's eyes narrowed, but he returned the gesture. The teacher folded an arm behind his back, raising his cane with his right hand and waving at the students.
I suppose most of you are here because you want to learn to fight, yes? No need to wait on that any further, I suppose. Any volunteers?
I blinked. We're going to start fighting now? None of us have had any training with our attunements yet. This is going to be a complete mess. Which is probably what he's looking forward to, I suspect. I didn't stand up. Most of the class did, however, including Roland and Patrick. Sarah looked right at me, which was interesting. I hadn't realized she'd seen me. She remained seated as well. The teacher turned straight to Roland.
Eager to be embarrassed again immediately? What's your name?
Roland's eyes narrowed into a glare.
Roland. Roland Royce.
Well, good Sir Roland. Roland, what an unusual name. You can come stand up here, and...
He waved at another student, a thin boy with an elementalist mark on his left hand and a glove on his right.
Master Kent, you can join us as well. The rest of you who volunteered remain standing.
Both students made their way to the stage, taking positions on opposite sides. Roland's hands sat on the hilts of his two canes. Master Kent raised his attuned hand into a ready position, indicating he at least had some idea on how to use it.
Oh, you're not going to fight each other. That wouldn't be interesting at all.
He smiled.
Outside of tournaments, most modern duels are not fought between two combatants who are equally eager. The overwhelming majority of duels are between one fighter who wants a duel and someone else who has no choice but to accept.
The teacher turned to Kent.
Master Kent, you're the son of a duke. When you inherit, you'll be able to challenge virtually anyone outside of the royal family to a duel. Let's assume you feel like showing off, not much of a stretch, I assume, and wanted to do so by beating someone in a duel. Who would you choose?
The skinny boy scratched his head.
Well,
he scanned the crowd.
Can I pick someone who isn't standing?
The teacher grinned.
Of course.
Kent turned his head, looking embarrassed.
Guess I've got to pick Marissa Callahan, then.
The girl who the teacher had called Miss Callahan earlier balled her fists, but remained silent and seated. The teacher tilted his head to the side.
Why would you select Miss Callahan?
Kent folded his arms.
Figure she's already got herself some points by finding you first. Gotta beat someone who already made an impression.
It was a fair answer, but his defensive body language and tone told me that he wasn't giving the whole answer. Interesting. Some history there? He's got a similar accent, but it isn't nearly as strong as Marissa's.
Interesting reasoning, Lord Taft smiled. Miss Callahan, will you please come to the stage? Roland, you can step aside for the moment. You will not be participating in the first duel.
Roland scowled, stepping off the stage. The teacher stepped back to the furthest point on the raised platform as Marissa reached the stairs, taking a position on the opposite side from Kent. I couldn't see any exposed attunements on Marissa's body, so I didn't know what to expect from her. Kent seemed to know her personally, though, so maybe he was more prepared. Lord Taft opened a compartment on the side of the stage, retrieving a large wooden box. After a few moments, he opened the top, reaching inside and raising a small metal disc.
Before we begin, I will need to check everyone's shield sigils. If you're still standing, you can sit down.
He walked to Marissa and Kent, briefly putting a hand on their sigils and closing his eyes.
This shield sigil will be your best friend at the school. Currently, both of yours are fully charged, but I will recharge them between classes. Do not lose it. You will not like what happens if you lose it.
As the combatants took positions on the stage, Taft walked among the rows of the class, checking every single student's sigil to ensure it was on and fully charged. His jaw was set hard as he watched the students. His playful demeanor had temporarily vanished. It made perfect sense. Even though there were presumably healers close by, it was tremendously dangerous to have inexperienced students trying to duel without any sort of protective gear. Her uniforms weren't built like dueling tunics. They would offer minimal protection, if any, from magical attacks. Lord Taft watched carefully as some of us adjusted the locations of our pins to his satisfaction, speaking as he returned to the stage.
If you use your sigil in class, see me or go to the divinatory before your next class. For this month, you will have your shield sigil recharged by a teacher or a second-year student. Even if you think you are capable of recharging it yourself, I will not tolerate any accidents.
He stepped to the back of the stage and then turned to Marissa.
Since you are the recipient of the challenge, normally you would be able to refuse. If you wish to remain enrolled in this class, however, you must fight. Will you participate?
Marissa nodded.
Good. You may choose the conditions of the duel. Since your opponent is an elementalist, I would recommend using only canes.
I think attunements will be fine.
Both Kent and the teacher looked stymied by that. After a moment, Kent gave a deep belly laugh.
Your funeral.
Marissa looked at the teacher.
Can we keep on fighting till one of us gets a clean hit in, Lord Taft?
I took a moment to process the question. Her strong country accent was throwing me off. She and Kent were the first students I'd heard with accents like that, and hers was the thicker of the two. I'd seen other commoner students, but mostly merchants and such. Not a lot of people from outside of a major city could afford the cost of taking a judgment. What was her story? Taft nodded in response to her question.
Oh, certainly. To be clear, I will ignore glancing blows and only call the match when one of you lands a solid attack.
Marissa gave a slight bow. If it's all right, Ringmaster Kent, that is.
Kent chuckled again.
"'Tis fine with me. Means I won't have to go easy on you.
She nodded silently, a look of intense focus crossing her features. Teft stepped off the stage.
Well, that's settled, then. Begin.
No preparation time? I should have expected that, given the teacher's prior behavior, but it still caught me off guard. Kent, however, seemed more prepared. He reached with a gloved hand and pulled his cane off his belt, flicking a finger against the activation rune. A burst of light surged from the cane, but Marissa was already moving. She pivoted to the right and leaned back, the movement causing the blast to miss her by mere inches. Her own cane was in her left hand a moment later. Kent fired again, but Marissa merely stepped to the side, her eyes focused on her opponent with deadly intent. A third shot, a fourth. Each dodged with no sign of effort. Marissa was halfway across the stage when she raised her own cane for the first time. The blast ripped across the stage in a moment. Kent attempted to twist out of the way, just as his opponent had, but he was too slow. The attack clipped his right arm. A flicker of sparks erupted as the mana shattered against his protective barrier. Kent growled, tossing his cane aside and raising his attuned hand. "Was hoping to go easy on you, Marissa, but you're not giving me much of a choice."
Marissa continued to advance, eyes hard.
"You're not giving me much of one either, my lord."
Kent raised his attuned hand and pointed it at Marissa, drawing in a breath before speaking,
"Third breath of the tiger, I call you!"
A torrent of sparks manifested around Kent's hand, flickering so brightly that I couldn't look at them directly. He pointed two fingers directly at his approaching opponent and then closed his eyes.
"Violet lightning!"
The voltaic charge was too fast for my eyes to follow, and it would have been far too fast for me to dodge. That was probably why Kent had chosen lightning. If Marissa was fighting based on dexterity, he had to choose something she couldn't evade. Marissa punched the lightning. The crackling bolt deflected off her fist, flashing skyward and disappearing into the distance. By the time Kent had opened his eyes, Marissa had closed the distance. Her fist glowed brightly as she slammed it into Kent's chest. The strike launched him back several feet and sent him tumbling to the ground. I winced. Even with the barrier, that had to hurt. Lord Teft clapped once.
"And that concludes our match."
Marissa took a deep breath, shivering for just a moment before returning to her chair. Two other students rushed to Kent's side, helping him stand. I turned my gaze back toward Marissa, who was still breathing heavily in her chair, her forehead matted with sweat. My mind replayed the moment of her deflecting that blast of lightning. Interesting. She didn't even use the cane. She's charging her bare hands with mana. Lord Teft turned to address Kent.
"That, Master Kent, is why an elementalist should never willingly duel a guardian without proper preparation."
The teacher turned to Roland next.
"Your turn. Let's see if you've learned anything,
Roland stepped onto the stage, looking wary. The teacher gestured at the audience.
"Who would you select to duel?"
My former friend scanned the audience briefly before his eyes locked on me.
"Oh, for the goddess's sake. For me, Corn Cadence would be the ideal opponent."
Chapter 7. Duel. Lord Teft gave Roland a toothy grin and turned toward me. His eyes widened briefly.
"Is that an enchanting attunement? Rhetorical question. Of course it is. Why is an enchanter in my dueling class?"
He folded his arms.
"That part was not a rhetorical question. Answer."
Is he messing with me? He checked my shield sigil. How is he just noticing my attunement now? I stood up.
"I intended to prepare a broad variety of enchanted items to assist with my dueling capability, sir."
"Enchanters are never successful duelists, Master Cadence, and even your family name won't change that. You can go find another class."
I didn't move. After a few moments of staring at me, he added,
"I mean right now, Cadence."
I glanced around. Roland had an expression that looked almost apologetic, which was more emotion than I usually saw him display. Sarah was clenching her jaw tightly. She looked like she was about ready to stand up and say something, but I didn't want to rely on her to protect me. My right hand tightened into a fist, but I tried not to sound as angry as I felt. I'd known that enchanters would be looked down on by some. My father was clear enough proof of that. Thalia had a militaristic culture, and I knew that attunements without direct combat applications were generally considered inferior. But somehow, I'd gotten the misconception that teachers would be impartial. That idealism being shattered this soon hit me harder than I would have expected.
"I'd like to be given a fair chance to demonstrate that my plan will work, sir."
He shook his head, and then leaned against his cane.
"Fine, fine. I'll let you stay if you can last 10 seconds.
I quirked an eyebrow.
10 seconds? 10.
He counted, raising his cane and pointing it at me. It wasn't a dueling cane, but it was glowing. Oh, Resh.
I managed to rise and throw myself out of the way just before a globe of light appeared and exploded nearby. I caught a glance at the globe-shaped section that was missing from the bench where I had been sitting, and quickly decided I didn't feel like taking a direct hit, barrier or not.
Most of the students around me froze. A few had the presence of mind to move, and one of them even screamed. None were being particularly helpful. I ran for the nearest aisle, drawing my dueling cane as I moved. I didn't have enough room to unsheathe my sword. I felt, rather than saw, the next globe appearing in front of me and kicked myself backward. The blast caught another student and hurled him outside of the stands. I landed on my rear, barely managing to retain my grip on my cane, and turned to see the smirking teacher already pointing his cane toward me again.
9, he said.
That was a lot longer than 1 second, but he hadn't been playing fair from the beginning. Fine. Screw fairness.
"Roland, Sarah! Suppressing fire!"
I shouted it, my voice commanding, but I didn't expect it to accomplish anything aside from a distraction. As I rolled to my feet, I caught sight of Roland drawing both canes and opening fire on the teacher in an instant. Lord Teft spun, an incredulous expression on his face, and deflected both blasts with his cane. It was clearly some sort of magical focus. An ordinary cane would have shattered from the impact, and even a dueling cane couldn't deflect projectiles without an active blade. Roland didn't pause his assault, and as he continued to unleash his blast, I heard Sarah speaking in a clear tone.
"Child of the goddess, I call upon your aid. Rain frost from the skies in a permafrost cascade!"
The skies darkened as her words echoed in the air. Dozens of spears of ice manifested in the air above Lord Teft, hovering in place for an instant before descending with artillery force. Holy goddess! Teft stepped backward, dancing around the first spears as they impacted with the stage, and then waved a hand. A wall of flame manifested in between him and the spears, melting the remaining projectiles as they descended. I had no idea how she'd just pulled that off, but I wasn't going to complain. While the students and teacher were distracted, I ran straight out of the stands toward the rest of the school. I'd barely cleared the aisle when Lord Teft appeared in front of me. To my credit, I raised my cane quickly, even as questions raced through my mind. What? Did he just teleport, or... Teft's cane began to glow. I fired a blast from my own cane directly at it, connecting with the gathering energy, triggering an explosion that hurled the teacher back. He recovered almost instantly, shaking his cane in the air.
8...
he said menacingly, raising the cane again. You have got to be kidding me. The logical part of my mind told me to run in the face of such overwhelming opposition, but I was done running. Or more accurately, I was done running away. I charged him, running my finger across the rune that triggered a blade to emerge from the cane. Behind me, near the stands, I could hear the sounds of more explosions, more combat. Distantly, I was aware that meant someone else was still fighting back there, but I didn't have time to evaluate that in any detail.
Teft seemed ready for the move, raising his cane into a high Varassian guard, as if he was holding a saber. Considering the magic I'd seen him perform, I had to assume that a strike from the cane that connected would be just as dangerous as a real sword would be, if not more so. I couldn't afford to take a hit from that. When I was almost in reach, I pressed the button to charge the blade of my weapon, feeling a sharp pull as the mana slid through my hand. I threw it at him. Teft didn't look surprised by the move, but he also didn't avoid it completely. The blade glanced across the left side of his coat, revealing a hexagonal barrier that deflected it harmlessly to the ground. By the time he had recovered, I'd already drawn the sword from my belt. The cane had been a good ranged weapon, but it had poor melee reach. With the sword, I could match his range, and I expected that the frost enchantments would lend it force. I smiled, assumed a Tyrian low-dueling stance, and addressed the teacher. 7! His eyes narrowed. I lunged. Teft deflected my strike to the left, then followed up with a sweep at my legs. A typical maneuver. I stepped forward and right, avoiding the swing, and kicked him in the leg. He stumbled back, some of the kinetic energy carrying through the shield. I swung the blade again, this time at a downward angle toward his chest. I never saw the explosion that hit me from behind. I was on my face a moment later, then rolling to my feet a moment after that, swinging my blade upward and deflecting a cane swipe aimed at my head. The weapons rang as they met in the air, and I saw a hint of frost creep down the tip of his cane as I pressed against the swing. Frowning, Teft stepped backward, waving his cane in the air as if to warm it. The frost continued to creep up the weapon as I stood, resuming my previous combat stance. Teft waved a hand over the cane, bathing it in a burst of flame. The frost melted away, leaving a shimmering cloud in the air. "Interesting," he mumbled, shaking his head. I lunged again, but he was ready this time. He sidestepped, slamming his cane into my left shoulder. My barrier kicked in and absorbed some of the impact, but I still felt a sharp surge of agony. Apparently these defensive devices only offered partial protection. I staggered back at the blow, shaking my left hand in the air. "I think we're at about -50 or so at this point."
"I'll call it 5.
Teft beckoned to me with his cane.
"Unless you can't continue, of course."
I shook my head. "I was really only worrying on your behalf. After all, it must be difficult to retain your concentration when you have so many things to distract you." He raised an eyebrow.
"And what do you mean by that, Cadence?"
"Defend yourself. I'll explain while our weapons talk." I stepped forward, making a low swipe at his knees. He hopped over the slash, then swung at my arm again. I parried this time, pressing against his cane, watching the vines of ice spread from my blade onto his weapon. I wasn't certain if it was actually damaging his cane, but it certainly seemed to disturb my opponent, and that was enough. As I expected, he stepped away hastily, once again bathing his cane in flame. I struck again, just as the flames dissipated. "I saw a second invisible figure in the stands while you were talking earlier. You told Roland he was wrong, but his instincts were close to the mark."
4. You believe I have an accomplice of some kind? Or that I'm not Lord Teft, perhaps?"
He deflected my strike, but again, I was able to step forward and kick him before he could react. The attack didn't connect very hard, but he frowned and stepped back nonetheless.
3.
"Not at all. The Teft I saw on the stage was easily able to dodge Sarah's spell and deflect Roland's blasts. Those were much faster than the kicks I'm landing right now." "Or," I said, "the trap you just stepped into." I jabbed at him. He stepped back, as expected, and stumbled as he stepped right on top of the still energized blade of my dueling cane. I saw his barrier crackle as the mana charged in the weapon lashed against it. He stepped to the side and kicked the cane's hilt, sending it flying at me, but I was able to easily step out of the way. "You're slower here because you're dividing your attention. One of you is a projection, a simulacrum. And that," I concluded, sidestepping and making a vicious lunge at his chest, "is why you're too slow to win." He caught my blade in his hand.
2. You're right and wrong, Corin.
He slammed his cane into my chest, knocking me back. and I lost my grip on my weapon as I fell backward. Dropping my blade, he followed me as I recoiled, putting his cane on my neck.
I am a simulacrum, but I am not slower than the real Teft. I'm autonomous.
His eyes gleamed.
I was letting you hit me.
I grabbed his cane with my left hand, but my grip was still weak from his earlier strike, and he quickly pulled it out of my grasp.
Do you have any other insights to share before we end this?
He raised his cane, a crimson glow forming around the weapon. I gave him the most serious look I could muster. Just one. No, zero, actually. He rolled his eyes, pulling the cane away and lowering it to the ground.
Yes, yes, you've lasted your 10 seconds. Very well, Corin Cadence, I suppose you can stay.
Thanks, magical construct.
Teft shook his head. Don't get too snide, boy. You're the one who just got beaten by a fake.
And with that, the duplicate Teft vanished, and I picked up my weapons to rejoin the class. The real Teft was wearing a cocky expression, leaning against his cane when I made it back to where I'd been sitting, which was, of course, still ruined. I chose to stand rather than sit in the crater. Sarah and Roland were still standing, too. Roland had returned to where he'd originally been seated. Lord Teft made a dismissive wave with his left hand.
You can be seated now, children.
I folded my arms, glanced at the destroyed spot, and then back to him. Sarah and Roland sat down, though.
Close enough. Interesting tactic, Master Cadence, and admittedly not one I would have anticipated. Obviously calling in outside help would be illegal in a duel, but I didn't say it was a duel, so I won't penalize you for it. Your performance was adequate,
he glanced at Sarah and Roland,
and the loyalty of your friends somewhat surprising. I could have them expelled for attacking a teacher without permission.
Roland bristled at that comment, but Teft continued talking.
This is, in fact, why they will be rewarded. In a battle, that sort of unflinching loyalty is a rare and valuable resource. Of course, you'll need to ensure that you're being loyal to the right people. 10 points to the 2 students who responded to Master Cadence's call. 15 for the other gentleman, he looked at Patrick, who assisted them without Master Cadence's prompting.
Patrick joined the fight? I hadn't seen that happen. It must have been while I was outside of the class area fighting the double. I felt a moment of guilt for not including Patrick when I called for help. Still, I hadn't known what his capabilities were, or that he would have helped. It seemed I'd underestimated him. I looked at Patrick and sent him a gesture of thanks. He nodded in reply. Teft continued speaking, beginning to pace around the stage.
I suppose most of you were focusing on the show on the stage. I'd like a student who wasn't involved in that little contest to summarize for the other students what happened to Master Cadence after he fled the stands. Anyone?
Kent stood up.
My, volunteering again, Master Kent? Very well. Explain.
Kent stood, gesturing to the area where I'd been fighting. He was fighting a copy of you over there. A simulacrum, I think. One of the Shaper spells?
The teacher nodded. Close enough. Simulacra will be the subject of today's lesson.
I raised an eyebrow at that. Given Teft's behavior, I wasn't aware this class was going to have lessons. Teft paused his pacing, coming to the center of the stage.
A simulacrum is a copy of a living being that is constructed from mana. As Master Kent pointed out, creating a simulacrum is one of the most advanced abilities of the Shaper attunement. While Shapers are typically associated with creating and controlling spectral weapons, armor, and other objects, the simulacrum spell is far more versatile. It will be many years before any of you is capable of constructing one, of course, but you should be aware of their existence for 3 main reasons. Would anyone like to speculate on these reasons? Not you, Master Kent.
I was already standing, so I simply raised a hand.
Oh, sure. Let's have you give it a try, Master Cadence.
I lowered my hand. They're legal in virtually all forms of duels, and the flexibility they provide makes Shapers the most dominant attunement in most of these scenarios.
Close enough. What about the other 2 reasons?
I scratched my chin.
You said earlier that
perception was important. You were deliberately misleading us so that we didn't notice the simulacrum.
An accurate assessment, but not related to the question I'm asking. We'll call that 1 out of 3. Anyone else?
A student I didn't recognize stood up. He was dark-skinned, heavy-set, and wore thick spectacles.
You,
Lord Teft gestured at the student.
Ah, an actual shaper wants to answer a question about shapers. Miracle of miracles. I don't recognize you. Give me your name and answer.
Matthew Cord, sir, and, I think what you're looking for, or one of the things is that, monsters in the towers are usually simulacra?
Good, good. Not precisely accurate, but close enough to count.
I was taken a bit aback. I'd never heard anything like that. Teft continued his explanation.
Ever wonder why monsters in the tower vanish when slain, often leaving behind crystalline mana? And how there always seem to be more monsters, regardless of how many climbers go through the tower? That's because they are not, for the most part, actually monsters at all. Not in the conventional sense. Modern studies have concluded that the majority of monsters encountered in the towers are mana constructs. They're not exactly simulacra in that we don't believe they're copies of a single core monster that's actually alive somewhere. Probably. They are, however, functionally similar.
He paused for a breath and then continued.
This is part of your first lesson, because I want you to understand the significance of it. Simulacrum spells, when utilized to the highest degree of efficiency, can populate something on the scale of an entire tower worth of duplicates. The military applications of this are obvious, but consider how it could be utilized to improve society if we could harness the same source of mana that the towers themselves utilize. Mana constructs could be used to replace virtually all labor. This is, for many shapers, something of a goal.
He waved at the student.
Now, the third reason they're important?
Cord shook his head.
I don't know what you're thinking of, sir. Low-risk infiltration, maybe?
Lord Teft sighed.
There is potential in that line of thought, if further refined, but a traditional simulacrum spell has only a short duration. They continuously drain mana from the caster. Several kinds of mana, in fact. Mental mana, life mana, and general mana.
His lecturing tone had a sharp cadence to it.
That makes them prohibitively expensive to use for a long duration. This is why we'd love to crack how the tower creates constructs that seem to last indefinitely. Suffice to say that simulacra aren't useless for infiltration, but not as useful as they could be. Anyone else?
No one else spoke up. Teft shrugged a shoulder.
Well, class is dismissed then.
Most students glanced around nervously for a moment, uncertain. Seriously? He's not going to tell us the third application? I suppose he'll probably ambush us again with the same question later to see if we've figured it out. I shook my head as the students made their way out of the stands. I followed with the crowd, retrieved my weapons, and then headed back toward my room. It didn't take long for Sarah to catch up to me, with Roland and Patrick still following close behind her.
You got yourself into quite a mess today.
I glanced at Roland.
I think it would be more accurate to say that Roland got me into a mess, but you both helped get me back out of it, so I'll call it even.
Patrick laughed.
Oh, man, you should have seen your face when that orb exploded behind you.
I laughed in spite of not finding it particularly funny.
Yeah? Oh, and it's good to see you, Patrick. It's been too long.
That was at least partially true.
Yeah, been a while. You seem pretty much the same, though.
I nodded.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Roland's contribution was almost a whisper.
Your mother misses you.
I blinked as my mental landscape shifted.
Mother.
How long it had been since I'd even written to her. I was a terrible son, wasn't I? My expression flickered and I turned my head.
Thanks. I miss her too.
You still living with House Liren?
House Liren was my mother's house. Unlike in some cultures, married nobles in Velia generally retained their original house name as their surname. My mother, Laura Liren, was no exception. Roland nodded. From his expression, that looked like the end of the conversation for him, which was fine by me. Sarah frowned at me. You look pretty rough. You want to go get something to eat? I looked at my two old friends, at Sarah, and at the still devastated stands. I was bone-tired, but that fight had shown me something significant. Something I'd known before intellectually, but that I hadn't really internalized. I wouldn't have lasted 10 seconds without help. Not even 10 real seconds, if the teacher had been playing fair. If I wanted to survive the rest of the year, I needed to be a little more open to the idea of having other people in my life. And so, I fought down the nervousness and fear that still lingered in my veins and said, "Okay." My right hand was twitching as I set my tray down on the table in the dining hall. I didn't know if it was because I was nervous or just a side effect of the mana that was siphoned from my hand each time I'd used the dueling cane. Most likely it was a combination of both. Sarah sat down next to me, which made things a little easier than if I'd been stuck sitting in close proximity to Roland or Patrick. I'd never had a problem with something that minor when I was younger, but a couple years had made me anxious that I wouldn't live up to anyone's expectations. While I poked awkwardly at my food, Patrick leaned across the table toward me.
"That was amazing back there. Do you think we're going to get to fight in every class?"
I blinked. "Goddess, I hope not." I'd been practicing dueling since I was old enough to hold a cane, and younger than it was strictly legal. The fight we just engaged in was not something I was particularly interested in repeating. I didn't like being an object for his lessons. I shook my head. "We'll get more chances to duel, I'm sure, but he wanted to make the first day flashy to leave an impression." Sarah gave a snort of a laugh. "If he wanted to leave the impression that he's a dangerous narcissist, he succeeded at that."
"I warned you."
Roland folded his arms, looking to Patrick, then to Sarah.
"He has a reputation for these kinds of grandiose actions."
Patrick grinned.
"I thought it was amazing. How often do you get to see magic on that scale? I mean, there was that one time when Lady Liren..."
Sarah cut him off with a sharp gesture.
"We all remember Lady Liren's duels, Patrick."
Did I sense a hint of bitterness there? What was that about? I suppose Lady Liren, being my mother and not her mother, probably had something to do with it. If Sarah was my half-sister, did Mother treat Sarah badly? I'd never seen anything like that, but it wasn't impossible, especially for the last few years while we'd been far apart. I wanted to ask about it, but this wasn't the place or the time. Instead, I turned my head to Sarah to ask her something different. "What was that spell you cast? I knew you told me that summoners could draw power from monsters. Is that what that was?"
Patrick nodded vehemently. "Yeah, that was amazing, Sarah! That must have been, what, like a rank 2 or 3 spell?"
"Rank 2 or 3? I hadn't studied much about magical classifications yet. I knew spells varied in power, of course, and giving them some kind of number designation made sense for an academic setting. Still, I didn't ever remember hearing that term used. How much had I missed in the last few years of school? 4, actually, Sarah smirked. Patrick's eyes widened in awe. Sarah turned back toward me.
"And to answer your question, Korn, yes. I was drawing from a specific contract to cast that spell. I don't need to summon the monster itself to do that. Summoning monsters directly is rare and dangerous."
My brows knit together at that.
"I've seen plenty of monsters summoned in duels, though."
"Those are almost always figments, not the original monster," she explained.
"Figments?" I really hoped I wasn't the only one behind on these facts.
"What are those? Summoner equivalents of simulacra?"
"Almost."
At least she didn't seem to look down on me for asking.
"Figments are more varied. You'll often see ones that are smaller than the original monster, for example, but cost very little mana to maintain. I could make several of those at once and make each of them slightly different. Maybe make one monster quick, another more resilient, or that sort of thing."
"That sounds pretty useful," I noted.
Can you make something stronger than the original monster? She gave a thoughtful, before answering.
Probably. I suppose that depends on the monster.
Roland narrowed his eyes. How are you casting rank 4 spells? Most graduates can't do that.